Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to Empowerment Radio for You. I am the host of Empowerment Radio for You, and it is the number 4 and the letter U. I am the For You girl. My name is Stacey Cox Giovanni, and it is my honor and my privilege today to have a special guest on my show, Detective Mike Proctor. Mike Proctor has been with the Westminster Police Department for over 30 years. He's a recognized expert and pioneer in the investigation and threat assessment for stalkers. He's a published author of Antidote for a Stalker. He's been a consultant for numerous stalking cases in the U.S. and abroad. He's been on numerous TV and radio shows such as CNN, 2020, American Most Wanted, just to name a few. And it is my honor to bring on Detective Proctor. Hi, Detective.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you today? Everything's good with you?
Well, thank you so much
for taking time out of your busy day to be on this show. I am so excited about having you on. I'm going to kind of just jump into things, if you don't mind, because I know our listening audience is really interested in finding out about the stalking. You know, we live in very scary times right now, and all the things that are going on with the terrorists and the stalking. I specialize in working with abuse issues, so I see it on a day-to-day basis. You know, could you just give us an idea of what is the definition of stalking?
Yeah, I'll give you an idea, because California came out with the first stalking law in 1990, and it came to fruition in 91, and that's when I started working stalkers. And so I'm just going to give you the California law. You're in New York, correct?
Mm-hmm. No, we're in Florida.
Oh, Florida.
I'm in Florida.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and Florida, all 50 states have stalking laws, but California was the first. So I'll give you California's because it's pretty simple, and everybody's pretty much copied California's law in part or in total. So I'll give it to you. It's any person who willfully, maliciously, and repeatedly follows or willfully and maliciously harasses another person that who makes a credible threat with the intent to place that person in reasonable fear for his or her safety or the safety of his or her immediate family, is guilty of the crime of stalking. So, again, not too much to it. It's a what we call a course of conduct crime. It doesn't have to have a direct threat for it to be stalking, like I'm going to kill you. It doesn't have to be in the context. It's a series of events over a period of time in each state has a specific time period identified in their stalking laws. And so it's the course of conduct that would cause a person to have fear or emotional distress. It's what stalking is.
You know,
go ahead.
That brings to mind, you know, you see all of the advertisements for online dating, and, that's kind of alarming when you think about the fact that you're talking to somebody over the internet. You don't really know anything about that person. And what are some of the signs that you would look out for? Now, this is not just a male-female gender situation. When I work with abuse cases, it's not just a male-female gender situation. Males are victims of abuse as well as females. But what would someone be looking for in terms of what are some of the red flags a male or a female that is using the online dating system to kind of get a sense that there's just not something right with this person, that, you know, to kind of back off or be aware of what's going on?
Well, there's the problem is cyber stalking is huge in the United States and abroad. Just let me give you an overall background. The thing is, in the United States, we've got over 6 million stalking victims annually in the U.S. And out of that, women are predominantly the person stalked, but men are stalked as well. And when we're arresting stalkers, we were arresting women as well as men that were stalkers. The Internet is a problem because you have no clue, like you said, who's on the other side. of the stalking issue. In other words, when you're talking to somebody on the internet, you don't know who it is. You have no clue. And you're just trying to sort out everything. And you may have a poser on the other end. That's what a lot of people that work cyber stalkers or cyber crime call these individuals, a poser. They may not be who they are at all. They may be sending you a photograph of a person that's not that person. They may be giving you factual information that you think is factual, but it's not. Statistics about them, what they're like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they could be posing, and that's a problem. And you have no way of finding out about that individual unless you run them a record check or something like that when you get the information on them. It's a difficult scenario. So it's hard when the only way you're really going to know is when you actually meet these individuals and they start stalking behavior. And that could be most stalkers that come across really nice. They give you gifts. They don't seem like they're going to be a problem. And then over a period of time, they do become a problem. They become more controlling. They eliminate you from your friends and family. They don't want you to see anybody outside of them. They have all kinds of questions for you. We've had stalkers, unfortunately, that when a woman comes back from a job site, he'll do a pat-down on her or extra strip so that he can make sure that she hasn't had any relationship with another male. That's how bad they get in these relationships.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So,
well, you know what? You're talking strictly the profile that I work with when I talk to victims of abuse from perpetrators that are domestic violence and sexual assault. So it's very similar.
Well, no, you have that phishing thing. You've heard of that as well, haven't you? Not phishing, but catfishing. And you have an individual that you're talking to on the website, and you think this is, you know, some individual, and then you find out later it's not that person at all. And this is a problem that we run into a great deal as well with cyber crime.
So how do we protect ourselves then?
Well, when you get on the internet and you're talking to somebody, it's really hard to protect yourself in that environment.
Yeah.
That's why these dating sites, I would, you know, I'm 67 years old, been married for 25 years, or actually 26 years. My wife would kill me. So the thing is that I would hate to be in the relationships that people are out there now. Unfortunately, dating relationships are one of the largest environments that people get involved with now because they're so tech savvy and this is what they do. They're continually on the web, or they don't have time to actually go to a location where they can get in a dating relationship, so they go on these sites. And you hear all the horror stories about them. I'm sure there's sites that they go to, and they have a wonderful relationship, and there's no problems, but those aren't the kind of people that I run into. The kind of people I run into are the ones that are having the problems. So, and there's a great deal of those people as well.
You know, I'm from Illinois originally, and I was certified with the Illinois Attorney General's Office as a victims assistance practitioner, and we had a speaker come in that was affiliated with them. It was a police officer as well, and he actually got online and had the screen up and was online and posed as a 13-year-old girl. And I mean, within 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes, there was 50 men online that were trying to pursue this girl. I mean, so, you know, the internet is great, but it's pretty scary at the same time, and it's just you have to be aware. You can't go into things naively. You have to really do your homework and be aware of what's going on, and that's what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely, and there's the other part of the internet. It's called the dark web, and that's a really interesting place. I don't go into it, but people that work in with the FBI and other agencies get involved with it all the time. Regional forensic laboratories, that's where law enforcement sends a lot of their stalking-type crime or identity theft crime. Those laboratories get into that area all the time, and there's all kinds of pedophilia and people are actually getting people to kill people on that net. In other words, they paid
oh
for
God.
People to go kill people and things of that nature. It's called the dark net. And a lot of people are getting more and more involved with that. You have to get a special program to get into it. And once you're into it, then it's very difficult for law enforcement to trace. So that's another aspect of the Internet that's scary. Yeah, I agree with you. The Internet's a two-edged sword. You can gather a tremendous amount of information. You can do a lot of good with the Internet, but there's a lot of bad out there in the Internet as well.
Yeah, most certainly. What are some of the statistics concerning stalking in both the U.S. and elsewhere? Because this is worldwide. This is not, we're not talking about just the United States. This is a worldwide situation.
Absolutely. Like I said before, about 6 million or so souls are stalked annually in the United States. And out of that, the people that do all the stats say that, well, gee, only about 1% to 2% of those are actually killed by their stalkers. But when you're talking 6 million people, you're talking an awful lot of people that are killed by stalkers. And you have to keep in mind that not all stalkers ever threaten. That's not the case. Everybody thinks, well, they threaten you and they threaten to kill you or do damage to you, et cetera, et cetera. No, some stalkers don't do that at all. They just make your life a living hell because they're continually following you and harassing you. And they may be harassing you with, I love you, I can't be without you. And they give you gifts. They show up your place of work. They contact your parents. They contact your siblings. They contact anybody to try and gather information because with a stalker, information is key. Now, to give you some other examples, in Scotland in 2010, we assisted them in getting their new law on stalking. So that's one of the things that I do is I assist other countries through victim advocates and legislators in generating stalking laws because not all countries have stalking laws. They're starting to get more and more laws on the books in other countries, especially in the EU. But to give you an example, in 2012, the UK added a specific stalking section, two-way offensive stalking. It's a protection act specifically for stalking. They didn't have one prior to that because 4.9% of women in the UK and 1.9% of men from the age of 18 are stalked annually in that country. So I don't know what that comes out to exactly, but it's probably about 1.8 million people in the UK that are stalked. And elsewhere, it's a worldwide problem. In the European countries, Japan, Australia. Australia has 8 separate country states. They all have anti-stalking laws. So it's an issue throughout the world. And it's not something that's slowing down. In fact, it's getting bigger and bigger. And one of the places we see that is campus stalking. We're getting more and more stalking transpiring in the campus arena, and we've been doing a lot of research to try and assist administrators on campuses to take care of those issues.
You know, this is a very scary situation, and you know, the thing that you hear a lot on TV is that people disappear and then they realize afterwards that they've been watched for sometimes months. By someone.
Absolutely.
And you know, you have to be aware of your surroundings and what's going on around you because you just can't be oblivious. You know, I talk to groups. I'm on the Speakers Bureau for RAIN, and I talk to groups about domestic violence and sexual assault. And you know, it amazes me when I try to talk to some of these women's groups and for awareness that they say, well, I really don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about something else, but that's a dark subject. Hello. It's life. It happens. You know, you have to be aware of what's going on around you, and maybe it won't happen to you. God hope it won't happen to you. But what if it happens to somebody you love? What if it happens to somebody in your neighborhood that you need to be aware of what's going on around us? We cannot be oblivious to the reality of life in this day and age. It's just not a prudent thing.
Absolutely, and because you work with DV, we work with DV all the time, and the thing is, or we call it intimate partner stalking. That's the primary stalking, by the way. Most people think that a lot of stalking transpires within Hollywood and the media and that type of thing. But in realistically, that's only 9 to 10% of all stalking. The largest portion of stalking is what we call intimate partner DV stalking, and that's about 80, 85% of all stalking. Then you have acquaintance stalkers and stranger stalkers. And people, law enforcement, when I train them, right now I'm teaching the California District Attorneys Association. I have several seminars set up with them. And it's amazing that you, when you're talking to law enforcement, they don't realize that there's all different types of stalkers out there. And the thing is that you have to know the type of stalker you're dealing with, what kind of mental disorder they may have or may not have, how they operate, before you can actually do a very thorough investigation, because each stalker does his trade, stalk and trade, differently than any other stalker. Even though the behaviors are similar a lot of times, you have to know the type of stalker you're dealing with. In regards to motion picture industry and that type of thing, many of the stalkers in that environment are delusional. Most stalkers are not delusional, and unfortunately a lot of people think they're all delusional, and they're not. They know exactly what they're doing. But in the motion picture industry and media stalking, those people feel that they have a relationship with that person, be it male or female. And oftentimes, to give you an example of the Taylor Swift scenario, the guy believed he was married to her and they're going to have children together and that type of thing. So it's something that you have to be aware of, and then you have to figure out what you're dealing with. That's why we came from a specific type environment. In other words, we have a family protection units where I came from when we work stalkers, and we have a team that works stalkers, and that's the best way to work them, including mental health professionals, social workers, etc. The TMU, the Threat Management Unit for LAPD, does the same thing. So if you have a team approach to working stalking, it's the best way to do it.
You know, I like to segue from the conversation that we just had and talk about what are the different types of stalkers. I think
okay.
That's a very interesting topic to talk about.
Well, in my book, I list the domestic violence stalker, the acquaintance stalker, and the stranger stalkers. Those are basically the three primary type stalkers, and you can build on top of all those. In other words, domestic violence is pretty simple. You have an intimate partner relationship. An intimate partner doesn't mean you have to have a sexual relationship, because that's the way intimate partner has been classified. But a relationship where you live together or are cohabitating together, etc. And those are some of the most violent type stalkers that we have. In fact, about 85% of all women that are killed prior are stalked prior to perdition. So the acquaintance type stalker is an individual where you may encounter them at work. And we have a lot of workplace violence stalking. And I teach businesses on how to handle that and develop a team that handles that within their corporations, because you do have it. And that's an individual, you don't have a sexual relationship with them, you don't have a dating relationship with them, but maybe you've encountered them in a business environment, at a meeting, or you go to coffee with them, or whatever. Or we've even had them where they cross paths in a supermarket, and the people have no idea who the person is initially, but they keep encountering the same people over and over again. In fact, the first stalking tort, and I was involved with that, that's a civil litigation against a stalker, involved a large supermarket chain where one of the female tellers was stalked by a customer that would come in all the time. She had no idea who the guy was, but I mean, he'd come through and go only through her particular lane, and he would wait for, you know, several minutes to make sure she was actually at a teller window or a cashier window before he would come up and have her take care of him. Stranger stalkers. Those are some of the scariest stalkers for people, because you have no idea who it is. And when we work those types of stalkers, what we do is we work the victim, because we don't know who the stalker is. And so we have to follow the victim, figure out what her proclivities or his proclivities are, and that's how we investigate a stranger stalker. And then you go further and you can start breaking these down into subsets, what I've done, and you get things like a triangle stalker. That's an individual, to give you an example, you have a female that wants to get to a male, and there's another woman that he's dating, and so she tries to eliminate that woman from the picture. Because, and so the male's at the top of the triangle, if you can picture it. The secondary victim is the woman that this person wants to eliminate to get to the top of the pinnacle or the top of the pyramid. And so that's a triangle stalking. We see this in domestic violence. We also see this oftentimes in the media scenario. An excellent example was that was when you have a movie star. We had Catherine Zeta-Jones, and she was being stalked by a female. However, everybody thought that the female was going after Catherine Zeta-Jones. No, she wanted Catherine Zeta-Jones' husband. She didn't want Catherine Zeta-Jones. She wanted to eliminate Catherine Zeta-Jones out of the picture so she could get to her husband. So that's a triangle stalking. And you have a predator-type stalker, and just what you were talking about. They stalk people prior to perdition. Now, some serial killers do this, not all, but some. And we've had a situation on two or three occasions we've been called in where we have a young child that's being stalked by a pedophile. And the child does not know that the pedophile is out there, but the pedophile keeps tremendous amounts of logs, notes, and everything else. So one of the cases we were called in on, the pedophile wrote, "I know I'm going to sexually assault this young boy, but what I'm having a problem with is how am I going to kill him afterwards?" And they asked me if that was stalking, and I said, "No, it's not stalking, and why isn't it stalking? Because the child does not know that he's being stalked. This guy would follow him in the parks. He would come up and rub up against him, and the kid just thought he just got bumped. He had no idea, so that couldn't be stalking. I'd like to see a law that goes to that. Once we find out that a child is actually being stalked by a predator, then we can go not just stalking, but other charges as well. But right now we don't have any laws like that. The closest we have is a California law that's a misdemeanor that a pedophile was going around all the parks, and he was photographing the kids and transmitting that information to other pedophiles and describing the child, et cetera, et cetera. And you can no longer do that in California. So third-party stalkers, that's somebody that a stalker contacts to, and we've had them even paid to do damage to the victim's cars, vehicles, houses, et cetera. So that's a third-party stalking. Now, people talk about gang stalking. I've never really seen a gang stalking issue. However, if there is a gang stalking, because we have to keep open minds, then I would classify that more as a third-party stalking, utilizing other people to assist you in your stalking. And you have a retribution stalker. That's usually in a workplace environment, that type of thing, where the individual wants to get back or revenge, so they stalk to actually cause revenge to the individual, cause damage or injury or even death to that individual. Retribution stalker. Neighborhood stalkers are a real problem, and because they're neighbors, so it's difficult with restraining orders and everything else. They can become extremely convoluted, and we tell law enforcement that you have to make a series of arrests to eliminate the threat. And juvenile stalkers, that's a problem that we're really seeing a lot more now. In fact, it's interesting because there's a lot more females involved in juvenile stalking than males, per se. And they don't, their females are not going after their targets for sexual purposes in most cases. Sometimes they are, but in most cases they're not. They're actually doing it for revenge and or bullying, which is comes into play with juvenile stalking a tremendous amount. They use social media a great deal. And unfortunately, what's the outset of that is that the female that's being harassed and harangued commits suicide. And in Florida, you just not too long, I believe it was in 2013, you just had a scenario where two girls were harassing a female so much that she committed suicide, and they arrested the two girls for stalking. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. And the last one I'm going to tell you is campus stalking, because again, that's something that's huge that we've really started doing a lot of research on and working. I just got finished doing a program with USC in regards to that. So those are issues that we see on a regular basis. And the problem with campus stalking is digital, is your internet, your social media, all that kind of stuff. Plus they have access to the school information sites, and they're in school with this individual all the time. So it closes their window of opportunity. They have access to the poor victim on a regular basis. And the other problem we have with that is that the females that are stalked on campuses oftentimes succumb to peer pressure and don't notify anybody. They also feel they can handle the stalking themselves, and they can't. So we're trying to get them a better way of getting to law enforcement and school authorities to better understand the issue of stalking on the whole. Hopefully that helps you a little
bit. What is the percentage of ladies, of students, female students that are stalked on campus that result in sexual assault? Because it's rampant on the campus settings. It's rampant that, you know, and it just burns my blood when I hear, you know, well, she was getting drunk and she had no business. I don't care. You know, I'm a survivor of this, and I don't care if you're walking down the street with nothing on. No one has the right to perpetrate that kind of act on anyone. So, you know, and I tell my clients, you know, get restraining orders. What is the process? I know when you get restraining orders, when I deal with sexual assault and domestic violence clients, you know, and I tell them the protocol is to get a restraining order. What is the process of that in terms of stalking? How effective is that in terms of stalking?
Well, the thing is that restraining orders are a unique animal. We don't necessarily tell people to get just a second, I'm going to shut the door here. My dachshunds are going
okay.
Nuts. We don't tell people to get a restraining order all the time. That, again, we're working out of a team environment, because if you know, you have to know the stalker. If you know the stalker, and if you think that a restraining order is going to exacerbate the situation, you don't tell them to go get a restraining order unless you feel it's absolutely necessary at that time. And we always, if we do tell somebody to get a restraining order, we walk them through getting the restraining order. We just don't tell them, go get a restraining order, because they're already victimized already. And so when they go to the court, they don't know what they're doing. So what we do is we take them by the hand. We have an aide that does that with them, a social worker or a victim's advocate, and they walk them through the entire process. They make sure their kids are taken care of. There's a lot of things that we do with victims that a lot of police departments don't do. So, but restraining orders are good only if you back them up. If you just have a paper, it doesn't mean anything. You, as the law enforcement agency, have to back it up. So restraining orders are good.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's not the case a lot of times, unfortunately.
Well, it's different every place. That's the problem. And what we did is we like to have the judge issue a protective order in the courtroom environment after we'd arrested the guy and brought him in, because that's a criminal stay-away order versus a civil stay-away order. So you have to, like I said, you have to know what you're dealing with, what kind of stalker you're dealing with, and what the threat is. That's when we do a interview of the victim, then we are able to verify or think about what the lethality is of that particular stalker. And once we figure that out, then we know we can take some time with this, or we have to jump on it right away. So, I'm sorry to say that, unfortunately, stalking is not prosecuted anywhere near as much as it needs to be. That's a fact.
You know, let's talk about some of the mindset of a stalker. What makes them tick? I mean, how do they, in the situations where maybe it's a pedophile or another situation, how do they target their victims? I mean, that just is amazing to me that they can just target somebody out of the blue, that they have no concept who that person is. I mean, what is their mindset? Just what makes them tick?
Yeah, pedophilia and everything else is a whole different, you know, kettle of worms. We could go, it goes on forever. But in general, just to give you an idea about pedophiles, they hunt within a group. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but that's what they do. They hunt within a group. They pick a child that has, sometimes they have a certain kind of ears or certain kind of hair, or they're the right age, or that's how they hunt. It doesn't make any difference who the child is, for the most part, but they hunt within those areas. In other words, it has to be between 9 and 11, or 12 and 13, and it has to be a slender child, most of them don't go after heavy-set children, but or a child at risk is easy to control, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's all kinds of mindsets for pedophiles, and we're not going to be able to get into all that stuff. But you can be a victim of stalking no matter and how good you try and protect yourself. You know, you walk on the right side of the street. You keep your head up when you walk. You do all kinds of things. You are very cautious about who you talk to, who you're with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we always tell people, if you're doing this dating thing, to make sure that you bring your own car and you meet at a safe location where the first time date, especially the first couple dates, you don't ever take them home, you don't do anything like that, you don't give them that kind of information. And unfortunately, too many people in a conversation give out a ton of information about themselves. And one of the problems that we have is we have stalkers that hunt in churches. And why do you think that transpires? Because when you go to church,
it's a safe place. People go there thinking that's a safe place.
If you go to church, it's a safe place, and you go there to commune with other people and to praise God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're open. You're open to these people. So that's what happens. And you give out a bunch of information because you want them to be comfortable in your environment and that type of thing. And so we've had many stalkers that will frequent churches and church internets and that type of thing and gain the trust of somebody, and then they stalk them. So, but again, even if you're the strongest person out there in the world and you do everything you're supposed to do in regards to safety, et cetera, you can still be stalked. You just have to know what to do after you've been stalked. And
let's segue into that, because I think that's very important.
Okay, well, document, document, document. We want you to document everything that transpires between you and the stalker. Once you've figured out you're being stalked, and it doesn't take that long to figure out, then you document everything you can, get a hold of your local law enforcement agency, and just don't go to the desk officer, okay? Don't go to the front desk and say, I think I'm being stalked. Because the desk officer may not be, depending on where you are and which agency you're with, he may not be trained in stalking at all or not very well trained. You need to try and find out in that law enforcement agency who handles stalkers. Oftentimes domestic violence detectives handle stalkers. So you need to find out who handles the stalker, contact them, explain your problem to them, and hopefully they'll get on the ball and they'll start working with you. You need to be, just like you said, aware of your environment when this transpires. Notify your parents, your schools. If you have children, and oftentimes we run into stalkers and there's children involved, and that's always another issue because they will use children as conduits to gather information on their target, especially if it's a marriage situation, a divorce situation. Mm-hmm. And you need to notify the schools that you have a stalker and this is the individual, and that they're not supposed to be. He's not supposed to be involved with this child or anything else. You need to make your parents or your other relatives and or friends aware that you're being stalked, so they can be aware of the situation and who it is. And you need to then keep all these records and make sure law enforcement is aware of them. This includes emails, texts, anything else. We also suggest that if you see your stalker in an environment and you have a law enforcement agency that's working with you, you want to talk to the law enforcement agency to see if they want you to take a photograph of that individual when you see him on your camera phone or whatever else. Now, of course, that could exacerbate the situation, but this is a way that the courts have of better prosecuting your stalker. So, again, there's a litany of things that you need to do, but the primary thing is get a hold of law enforcement, get them up to speed, and keep everything documented that has transpired between you and your stalker. Some people just throw stuff away, and you can't do that. And I'm talking about emails, texts, and everything else. And law enforcement gets up to speed, they'll do search warrants, hopefully, on this individual and find all the things you've been talking about. But usually stalking starts with gifts or in a domestic violence or an intimate partner scenario. It usually starts with gifts and moves on from there. And you may see your stalker becoming more and more controlling and frustrated and become more and more violent. Like I said, not all stalkers are violent, but many of them are. Does that help?
That helps immensely. Let me ask you a question. Normally, in what you've seen in your field, is this like a pattern with stalkers? Do they continue? Will they go from one person to another, or is it just something that they do a one-time situation, or what is the behavior pattern for that?
That's an excellent question. Okay, we coined a phrase called the Genesis victim because we've seen it so often. And to give you an example, before I get into the Genesis victim, yes, stalking recidivism is extremely high. They may not stalk more than one person at a time. In fact, we've never seen that happen. But if you intervene, they will move to a different target. It's their personality. Remember, they could have a mental disorder that causes them to move towards this direction, whatever it is, narcissistic personality disorder, bipolar. There's a ton of them that we see. And so they go after various targets. If they will stalk on a regular basis. Now, with a Genesis victim, you don't ever want to be a Genesis victim, because here's what happens with a Genesis victim. You're being stalked, and the stalker goes after you for a period of time, and law enforcement gets involved and intervenes, hopefully, all right? And he moves away from you and starts stalking another victim. But then somehow an intervention transpires there, and guess what? He comes back to you, because there's something about you that causes him to continually come back to you. And when we're working cases, we look for the Genesis victim, because we go and find that victim. They really don't like us for doing that, because they've been trying to stay away from this guy or this gal forever. But most of the time it's men that have a Genesis victim. Oftentimes, women don't have a Genesis victim. In other words, but in a gay or lesbian relationship, we see a Genesis victim scenario. And on occasion, we see in a gay male relationship a Genesis victim. But primarily, it's a male and female Genesis victim. So the thing is that once you are a Genesis victim, we want to find you, because we want you to testify. In California, you can testify against a stalker even if you're not being stalked by him currently. It's called 1101B evidence, and you can do that. It's called prior bad acts. So that's a Genesis victim. So I think that answers your question there.
It sure does. So can you just give us some insight as to what are some of the tools utilized by stalkers?
what are some of the tools that I say again?
Yeah, what are some of the tools that are utilized by stalkers? What is their pattern? I mean, is there...
Okay,
I think that's good to ask this, so it gives us some insight on some things to look for. Hopefully we'll be aware.
Right. Yeah, well, I guarantee you that unless you have some inferiority issues or things of that nature, you're going to pick up on a stalker right away, because he's going to come on really... For the most part, they come on really, they're intelligent, and they come on and they're nice to you. Can you wait just a second here?
Sure, so, not a problem.
Can you hear the dog? I got to move him.
Yeah, well, we have two here, so that's fine.
Okay, back. So.
All right.
Yeah, love them to death, but sometimes they can be really obnoxious.
Oh yeah, well, we got a big Labrador and a Minton, so we have money.
Yeah,
up here.
I got four dachshunds, and they're alerting on everything here. So the thing is, they start out that way. To give you an example, we had a female stalker that dated an individual for 6 months. And after that 6 months, he couldn't. She was so controlling, he didn't know what to do with himself, so he broke the relationship off. And then she would come to his house, and if she saw another woman there, she would take a softball and throw it through his window. She would, when he was playing tennis or something like that, she would come up and start taking her clothes off and things like that. She would try and force his door open and take her clothes off and demand sex. So this is the type of stuff that we see sometimes with female stalkers. With male stalkers, what they do is they continually try and find out where you are. Sometimes they'll use GPS devices and attach them to your car. And we get a victim that comes in and she says, this guy seems to know where I am every minute of the day. I don't understand. So we go out and we search the vehicle and we find a little GPS button or tag that's on the car. So they'll do things like that. They'll call you all the time just to try and locate where you are. Again, I said that what they'll do is they'll contact your friends. They'll contact your employers. They'll show up where you don't expect them to show up at all. And a lot of them have very unusual proclivities, which we're not going to get into all the stuff on the air. But one of them, which I'll give you, that's rather strange that I ran across just recently, is that he believed that he was a god and that he was going to stalk 9 females. And once he stalked them, after he was finished stalking the 9 females, they would become his slaves, and they would bring other females to him for the rest of his life. So we run across all kinds of weird people out there. And you say, well, they're not the norm, but unfortunately we do see an awful lot of that kind of norm, that type of normalcy, what they consider normalcy, because again, you have to know what kind of stalker you're dealing with. But your average day-to-day stalker, your domestic violence type stalker, he will just go after the target and not leave them alone. He will show up every place. He will contact them. He'll make threats. He will, if they have children, he'll ask the children to tell him to leave, where the woman's going, the target's going at all times, who she's seeing. He'll tell the kids to leave the doors open so he can come in the house and gather information on what she's doing. These are all tools that the stalker will use. Sometimes they'll sue you in court for malicious, stupid lawsuits that don't mean anything, but they are harassment tactics that they use. We've had stalkers go into victims' homes, and they've had a collection of, say, elephants or something like that, and they'll break off parts of the elephant's head or the tusks or something like that just to mess with the victim. Or they'll come into the victim's house and leave notes scratched on their television. All kinds of things. And every day I see something new. And this is what they do. So, and again, if you have a stranger stalker or something like that, you're going to have to work the victim backwards and see what you can get from that. Okay, does that help?
That helps immensely. You know, this has been invaluable help for the listeners. This happens. We can't turn a blind eye to these things. It happens. And the more education and awareness we have on this, and I applaud you for going out and doing these things and making everybody aware of what's going on, because it happens, and you know, we have to be aware, and we have to know what's going on. We're getting ready to close up, Detective Proctor, but if you would be so kind, if you kind of elaborate on your book a little bit, and I'm going to buy it.
Okay.
It sounds like a wonderful book.
Well, the book is designed, it's called Antidote for a Stalker. It's my second book. I write articles and books and teach and all that kind of stuff, just like you alluded to in the first part of the show. But Antidote for a Stalker is on Amazon, and it's over 500 pages, and it will take you through everything you need to know about stalking from A to Z. It has one chapter that talks about what stalkers are, what you need to look for, that type of thing. Yeah, another chapter talks about stalking typology subsets, some of the mental disorders that you see in stalkers, stalker's bag of tricks, like we're talking about first contact, vandalism, surveillance, targeting animals. I forgot to tell you that. Sometimes they'll kill your animal or take that, kidnap the animal to try and get your attention. Citizen harassment, court harassment, identity theft, cyber stalking, they do all that stuff. It's all listed in the book. And then Chapter 4 talks about, if I'm being stalked, what do I do? And there's a whole list of stuff that you need to do if you're being stalked. This will help you a great deal. And then the Chapter 5 talks about how we investigate stalkers, and that will help you as well, because it will give you an idea of what information you need to give to law enforcement. And we also talk in that section about what happens in a stalking trial, what to expect if you have to go up against your stalker in a stalking trial. So it's a great book for anyone that's curious about stalking, whether they're in law enforcement, victim advocate, victims of stalking especially, it's written for them, mm-hmm. and it's easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Everybody says I'm simple, so that's why they want me to write the books.
Well, you know, but I applaud you again for doing the work that you do, because God knows it's needed out here. If you'd be so kind as to give some contact information for the people out here that are listening to the show, if they'd like to be able to get in touch with you, you have a website that they can take a look at and contact you on that, email or whatever, and that way they can read about you a little more than just a little intro that I gave, because you've been on CNN and you've been on 2020 and Most Wanted, and I mean you're a celebrity.
I do a lot of consulting for victims of crime subject movies and things of that nature, like your Atlas Media ID channel, E Hollywood, that type of thing too. So the thing is, if anybody's interested, they can just go to my website, which is www.detectivemikeproctor.com. That's www.detectivemikeproctor.com. I also have a blog. It's called The Stalking Detective's First Aid for Victims. Stalking Detective's First Aid for Victims. And there's about 51 posts on that already. I just started that not too long ago. So they can follow on the blog as well. And that gives more information about the book and that type of thing, because the book will really help you. And I will tell you that what's nice about the book is it's well annotated, so if you want to look up a subject in the back, you can do it. It's a good reference guide. That's what people tell me all the time. It really helps them that way. And we want people not to be victims of stalking. If they're victims, we want to help them. So that's why we write the books.
Right, exactly. All right, well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be on the show. And again, bravo. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me. Anytime we get more information we can get out there to victims, the better off everybody is. And I learn something new about stalkers every day. So
Well, and I think that we do as an advocate for domestic violence and sexual assault and child abuse. I do too. We have to have our voices out here for the people that have no voice, and you are definitely one of those voices. Thank you so much, and you have a wonderful day. And again, everyone that would like to talk to Detective Proctor, or you send him an email if you're a victim and you have some issues and you don't know what to do, or you just like to have some information to give you some insight, please buy his book. And it's a wonderful book. And again, thank you so much for being on my show today.
Okay, thank you very much for having me, Stacy. You take it easy.
You have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, wow. That was food for thought. That was a lot of information. And a lot of information I think we need. As always, I try to bring people on that are the top of their fields, and Detective Proctor is definitely one of those. You've been listening to Empowerment Radio for You, the number 4, the letter U. I am Stacy Cox Giovanni, the host. I'm the owner of Lifetime Success for You. Again, number 4, the letter U. I am the For You Girl. I specialize in abuse and addiction. And if you'd like to take a look at my website, you can contact me at Stacy, Stacey, at Lifetime Success for You, or get on my website. And it is www.lifetimesuccessforyou. And as always, have a wonderful day. Next week, same time, same place, and hope to have you here. Take care. Bye-bye.